There are tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, step by step, step by step, I'm all around to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God.
Good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing tonight? And welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Step Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Patrick. I just want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Before we get started, we're going to have a two-minute silent meditation. So if you can, please take a moment to get situated, turn off all your cell phones and anything else that might make noise and distract other people around you. The reason that we take this time is to get connected to God, let the craziness of our day kind of drift away, allow us to get centered and focused so we can concentrate on the message that we're here to receive. So with that, see you guys in about 2 minutes. Okay, and if you guys would like to join me in the pew in front of you, you'll see these little cards. It's a fog light prayer. It says, God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, for those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. And now from there is a solution from the big book. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news that this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked my friend Joey to come up and read Spiritual Experience, which is found on page 567 of the big book. We choose to read this statement because this is what we're here for, to have a spiritual experience that can help us recover from alcoholism. So we feel it's important that we know what a spiritual experience is. Can you guys please help me welcome Joey?
How you doing, Joey, recovered alcoholic? Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described, though it was not our intention to create such an impression. Many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experience are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that as a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by the attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Joey. Okay, so at this time, I'm going to introduce Russell to come up to our meeting. Before we do, I just ask the group if you can please refrain from side conversations. Again, take a minute if you haven't already to turn off your cell phones as to not distract people. And also, if you can refrain from trying to get up, going in and out to the bathroom and back, might distract a person that's sitting next to you trying to hear this message. And with that, I just want to thank Russell for driving all the way up from Miami. It's been a real pleasure. I think we're here for seven weeks now, right? 7 weeks, and it's kind of a lot of what we hear about 3, 6, 7, 11, so I'm excited to hear what he has to say tonight. Everybody, please help me welcome, introduce Russell.
Oh, thanks a lot. That's great. Hi, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found necessary to take a drink, nor have I, since January 25th, 1981. And it's good to be here. And by the way, I really appreciate the introduction, but if you need to go to the bathroom, I don't mind if you go to the bathroom. I hate to think there's somebody in here really having to go to the bathroom. They're trying to get very uncomfortable because they're scared of leaving, you know. But alcoholics sometimes do that because they don't want to be noticed, you know. So it's good to be here, and I'm actually going to try to focus on step seven, which is I really want to say, like, one of my favorite steps to talk about, because I'm so familiar with it. I'm very familiar with it. It doesn't really, I don't know about working step seven. Step seven works me. I was thinking of giving my world-famous speech on humility, because it has to do with humbly asking God to remove our shortcomings. So I was going to do my well-known world-famous speech on humility, but I, quite frankly, never do it with a group this small. So, you know, that's the deal. So, but this is just my input. You know, I've been road testing this thing for about almost 34 years now. And so I have a lot of experience, you know, on this deal, actually living life through these steps. And you know, my first sponsor said that line, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. And so what I talk about, what I'm trying to talk about and convey with you, is my experience with Step 7, my experience with how this thing works. And I'm not going to try to pretty it up for you. I'm not going to try to make you feel good, you know, or any of that stuff. I'm just going to tell you the truth the way I see it. I'm not going to water down the chemotherapy, you know. You know, there was a guy up in Palm Beach that was dishing out whatever the drugs are for chemotherapy, and he was watering them down because he was making more money, and people were dying because you have to take them at a certain dosage level. And they were taking it at a lower dosage level because he was diluting them. And that's sort of like what happens with Alcoholics Anonymous. It says rarely have we seen a person fail if we've thoroughly followed our path. And I'm an alcoholic, and I read the word thoroughly like, well, that's close enough. You know what I mean? Close enough for government work. And I'm an alcoholic. I shave a few points off. You know, I say, you know, I owe somebody 100, I give them 80, and they say, where's the other 20? I said, I gave you 80. You know, I mean, it's just that it's close enough. You know, what do you complain about? It's close enough. You know what I mean? So this, you know, that's the way I read the, you know, whenever an alcoholic is told something, hears something, or reads something he doesn't like, it pisses him off. And I like to do things the way I want to. Part of being an alcoholic is to be defiant. That's our chief characteristic. I want to do this my way. Nobody has any right to tell me differently. This is the way I see it. This is what I think thoroughly means. This is what I mean, think utterly means, utterly turning your life over to him. This is the way I read the book. When I read the book and I do this thing, you know, some lines in the book I see, some lines in the book I don't see. Some of the stuff they dish out I agree with. Some of the stuff I dish out I don't agree with. I twist it. I turn it to my own. And, you know, the problem is this thing is sort of like a recipe. Like if you were making a chocolate cake. If you ate a chocolate cake and you really liked it, and you said, well, what's the recipe? And you give me your recipe, and so I want to make that chocolate cake. You know, and so I say, instead of putting in a couple of eggs, I put in egg beaters. You know, instead of putting in cream, I put in 2% low-fat milk. You know what I mean? I just substitute in ingredients. And you want to know something? It says put it in the oven, you know, for 1 hour at 300 degrees. But the truth is, I don't want to wait that long. So I put it in the oven for like a half an hour at 600 degrees, you know. And you know, it may come out of the oven sort of looking like the chocolate cake. It may taste a little bit like the chocolate cake, but it ain't the chocolate cake that they baked. So to me, there is a specific recipe as to how to do this thing. And we all try to come at it a different way. And you understand this ain't, one of the things I've learned about Alcoholics Anonymous is it ain't Well People's Anonymous. We got, you know, I'm an alcoholic, you're alcoholics, that's why you're here. And you know what they say in the book about alcoholics? It says what most people don't understand are alcoholics are very sick people. Did you know that? It says we're very sick people. And so you get a conglomeration of like 100 to 200 alcoholics, and you put them in a group together, and they got all sorts of issues and problems and feelings and personalities, and also, and some of them have 20 years, and some of them have 25 years, and some of them have 25 days, and you got all this stuff going on, and there's all sorts of disagreements as to how things should be done. We don't like being told what to do. You know, I mean, who the hell do you think you are? You know, take your own inventory. And we get this book, and it says, rarely have seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. And, you know, and I don't want to really get a sponsor. And if I get one, I don't really want to listen to them. And our favorite line is things like, you don't understand, I'm different. You know, it works for you, but it doesn't work for me. You know, I mean, we're just people that really are not, we're really not well fit for this program of recovery. You know, we're really not well fit to be, you know, regimented, you know, or being told what to do. And somehow, some way, over a period of time, we come in this giant funnel. You throw in hundreds of thousands, some of them come from treatment centers, and they come from where you put in this funnel, it sort of gets smaller, and the road gets narrower and narrower, and some of us sort of like fall out, don't make it. But a few of us, a few alcoholics, sort of stay in the funnel and sort of get to the point where they, you ready for this? Now I'm going to give you two words that you're not going to like, where they conform, where they become, you ready for this? This is a bad word. Alcoholics don't like this word. Where they become obedient. Where they obey without question. Where they do what they're told without question. It's pretty crappy, huh? You know, you didn't sign up for that shit. You know, I understand that, but that's what happens. You know, you somehow get to the point where you just do it. You don't sort of do it. You don't kind of do it. You don't try to figure out, you know, why should I listen to this idiot? You know, or something like, you just do it. And a few of us, you know, get to that point where we get what they talk about in this book. They talk about experiencing much of heaven and being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which they had not even dreamed. They talk about these incredible promises that are going to happen to you, which is what I'm going to talk about. And so that's what I like to talk about. I like to talk about what Bill Wilson referred to as emotional sobriety, the next frontier. He said, one of the things he said is that alcoholism, the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. And those unhealthy dependencies are manifest in our old ideas and our old behavior. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. Driven. We're driven. We don't even know we're driven. We just do what we do and act the way we act. And how to tie all these things in together. You know, sometimes you just see things much clearer in the rearview mirror. You know, coming up on this deal, coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, moving forward, I didn't understand. Listen, you know what I was doing? I was just trying to stay sober one day at a time. I didn't know I was changing. I didn't know what was happening. All I was trying to do is not blow my brains out and stay sober and not go through pain one day. I'm just doing like hand-to-hand combat against a crazy world, you know, that has all sorts of problems with and all sorts of issues and stuff like that, and trying not to drink and figure out how this is going. So why, as you're speeding through this deal, you have no idea what's going on. I ran into a gal today. God bless her. She was a waitress at the Cheesecake Factory, and you know, one of the gifts I think you get. In this deal is the gift of discernment, because you run into so many people that have problems, so many people that have issues. Have you guys noticed that in Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody's really drinking? No, have you really noticed that? This is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Have any of you guys probably go to AA meetings. You go to other AA meetings, right? You go to AA. Have you noticed that drinking isn't the problem? But you probably noticed you've been to AA. Have you noticed that alcoholics are crazy? I mean, even if you don't notice alcoholics, I'm just talking about yourself. Have you noticed that we're crazy? So, and you know how we're crazy. You know, an alcoholic. So after you've been hanging around alcoholics enough, and you got enough discussion meetings, you understand the song of the alcoholic. You know what alcoholics sound like. You know how they talk. You know how alcoholics talk. You know how they sound like. You know the phrases they use. It's like a song. It's like whether it's here or in California or wherever it is, you hear the song of the alcoholic. You say, that guy's an alcoholic. I mean, he may be an addict, he may be a meth addict, but you recognize the song of the alcoholic. You know, doesn't have to be drinking. He's just singing the song. You don't understand. You know. They don't know who they're screwing with. I'll show them. Why is this always happening to me? Whatever, you recognize the song. We have all these songs we sing of the alcoholic. And so this gal was our waitress today, and she was singing the song. And, you know, I have a real heart for people that are involved in this disease. And one of the things she said to me, she said, this is what she said. She said, "I'm so mixed up and confused." And I said, she said, "I'm so mixed up and confused." And I said, "I know." I said, "And I do know. I absolutely know." And I said, "But you don't understand. There's no problem here." I said, "There's no problem." He says, "Yeah, that's just your brain. There's no problem. It's just your brain. We can fix that. We can make you better." Like the bionic woman or something, you know. But, you know, she's just got to go through the deal. You know, it's just the brain. My sponsor said to me, "Why do you do the things you do?" He knew why I did the things I did, because he was an alcoholic. But he asked me, it was a rhetorical question. He said, "Russell, I guess I had done something or said something stupid," which was, you know, or whatever. I'd done something, you know, like Carl Menninger. Carl Menninger says, in his book, Man Against Himself, written in the 30s, he says, "Alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. We're self-destructive." We don't think so. We think we're doing all the right moves, making all the right moves, and doing all the right things. You know, we move here, we go there, we follow this here, and we you know, whatever it is, we do different things, and then 6 months later, when our whole life blows up, we say things like, how did I get in this jam in the first place? And we ask, "Well, you volunteered for it, don't you?" "Why am I in this lousy town, this lousy job with this lousy human being?" And then we say, "Oh, that's right. I volunteered for it. You know, that was my, I thought it was a great idea. It seemed like a good idea at the time, you know." And we have the book that says, you know, that selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our trouble. That's what it says. It doesn't say alcohol. What it says about alcoholism, what it says about the drinking, is says the drinking is, you know, but a symptom of our disease. It's a hell of a symptom. It's what gets us in here. You know, you don't get arrested for driving while feeling sorry for yourself or stuff like that, you know. You actually can make a real mess of your life and a real mess of other people's lives by the non-drinking stuff that is alcoholism. By the self-pityness, by the self-pity, by being an individual, you know, by your addiction to the worldly things, chasing the worldly things to make yourself feel better. You know, you ever say to yourself, you ever wonder what's wrong with you? You ever say, "What's wrong with me?" You ever think about yourself? I mean, if you're not watching a movie or something, you find yourself ever thinking about yourself. You ever think about wondering, you know, what's wrong with you? Why do you feel the way you do? And what, you know, sort of like thinking about, you know, what do you need to fix you? When are you going to be better? You ever wonder when it's going to be okay for you? In thinking about yourself, if you ever think about yourself, you ever come up with an idea that seems pretty clear that you need something, if you only had this, you'd be okay? You know, it ever occurred to you that, you know, if you only, oh man, if I only had a boyfriend or girlfriend, I'd be okay? Or if I ever, man, if I could only lose 50 pounds, I'd be okay? Or, you know, if I only had a new car, I'd be okay? Or if I only had a job, I'd be okay? Or if I only had this, be okay? You know, you ever come up with stuff, you know? If I only had a law degree, I'd be okay. If, you know, if people only like, you know, you ever start thinking about the things you need, you know. You know, whenever you become aware that you're missing something in your life, you immediately are also dissatisfied with what you have. Did you know that? Whenever you say to yourself that you need this or you want that, you immediately put yourself in a position that you hate your life and where you're at right now, if you're an alcoholic. So you don't even think about that. You don't even think about that when you're longing for something else and you're thinking you need something else, what you're really saying is you feel crappy about where you are. And so you can never feel good about where you are because you're always dreaming or thinking about having something else or being something else. And so what happens is you end up, you ever say, if I only had this, if I only had that, and then you grab that thing, you know, you go after that thing. You run over people to get to that thing. You know, you spend more money than you make to buy things you don't even need, to impress people you don't even like, because you think this will help you and that will help you. And then you got the thing and it makes you, like alcohol works. Alcohol worked for me because nothing worked quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented with their lives unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. But after you put the plug in the jug, and then you find that you're still restless, irritable, discontented, longing for something else, not feeling good, you know what you don't even realize is that you realize that then you go for the other stuff that doesn't work quite as fast as alcohol, but it works nonetheless. Bill Wilson talks about it. He called it worldly clamors. He calls it, and one of the things I read here, I think I read about the fudge, the fudge of life. The worldly clamors. What does he say in this book? He says it this way. He says, let's see if I bookmark this thing. Probably not. It's in Bill's story. It says, the real significance, this is on page 12, the real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. You know, the seventh step says, humbly asked him to remove these shortcomings. Humbly, whatever humbly means, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. God come. You know, when you want him enough, he shows up. When you want him enough, he shows up. You know something? He doesn't show up when you want a car, he ain't showing up. You know, when you want to get laid, he ain't coming to the party. Now, he ain't, I'm telling you, he's just not going to come because you don't want him. You want her. You want him. You don't want him. You know, when you want money, you ain't asking for him. And here's the thing, most of my life, I wasn't asking for him. I didn't want him. I wanted her. I wanted it. He ain't coming where he's not wanted, but he always shows up when we want him enough. And then you know what happens? When he shows up and everything gets great, then all of a sudden we start looking in another direction. That's what it says here. There had been a humble willingness to have him and with me, and he came. But soon, now listen to this, but soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out. I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound good. You know what I mean? From a standpoint, I think the blotting out of God in your life is probably not a good thing. Had been blotted out, it says, by worldly clamors. What do you think he's talking about? He's talking about everything out there. Mostly those within myself and how, and it says, and so it had been ever since, how blind I had been. So my sponsor says to me, that's just me. That's my personality. You want to know what alcoholism looks like? I'm alcoholism. It's me. It's in my DNA. My sponsor asked me, why do you do the things you do and think the way you think and say the stuff you say? And I say to him this. I said, that's just my personality. That's just the way I am. That's what I said. That's just the way I am. You know, when there's a part of me, you know, when I act out and I do crazy stuff and I say crazy things and I yell, there's a part of me that's sort of like in love with me because I'm like an individual. That's just the way I am. That's me. That's the way I roll. You know, that's just the way I roll, you know. That's me. So that's why I told him. I say, that's me. That's just my personality. And he says to me this, well, it's your personality that's killing you. How would you like to hear that shit? I thought it was the booze that was killing me. I thought if I got rid of, put the plug in the jug, everything would be okay. But then the problem is I put the plug in the jug, the stuff that made me feel okay, and then I was stuck with me, my personality. How'd you like to have a sponsor to tell you, you know, your problem is you. Your problem is your personality. So let me ask you this. So if, just in case that's true, if that's true, you know, and listen, if you really read this book and you read the entire book and read the steps, you pretty much got to come to the conclusion that they're talking about the real problem is you. I mean, really, if it wasn't for you, if you didn't have you, you wouldn't have a problem. You know, if you could somehow get rid of you and have that you, and change you, that's what it says. It says become reborn, become a new person, have that psychic change so that all of a sudden you react differently, you think differently. Isn't that what Dr. Jung said? Ideas and emotions that were the driving forces, the guiding forces of these men's lives. You know, everything about them was suddenly cast to one side and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas and emotions. That's what Dr. Jung said to Roland Hazard. He said, I've been trying to change you into a completely different person. A whole entire personality change. You can't even recognize the person from before from the person you are right now. That's a different deal. So how do you do that deal? How do you do that thing? You know, the problem is, you know what Bill Wilson found? Well, the problem is we find this problem in here. You may be able to do that for an hour. That's what he said. He said, I wanted God. By the way, if you read the book, that's what really does the whole thing. It's all a God deal. We can't change ourselves. You know, that's what it says in Chapter of the Agnostics, the chapter to the unbelievers. This sort of thinking, being an unbeliever, has to be abandoned. Because he said if a moral code or a better philosophy of life would have saved us, we would have been recovered long ago because we are so brilliant. You know, it's like Roland Hazard said to Dr. Jung, having gone through treatment, like he went through his 28 day, he went through a whole year of treatment with a psychiatrist. He said, having now known the inner workings of my mind, having now gone through the 28-day treatment program, having now gone through the steps one time, having now learned AA, you know, thinking, drinking was impossible to even consider. Nevertheless, he was drunk within a couple of weeks. He went back to Dr. Jung. He said, what's going on? I went underneath treatment. You're the greatest psychiatrist in the world. I did everything you told me to do. You know, I understand the inner workings of my mind. How come I'm drunk again? Dr. Jung said, listen, I've never been successful. You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never been successful with a person who has a mind like you of a chronic alcoholic. By the way, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you're here, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. He says, with some people I've been successful, but I've never been successful with a person. And he says, is there any hope? He says, here and there, once in a while, things happen, they're phenomena, they're miracles. I can't explain it. Where the driving forces, the guiding force of these men's lives are put over to one side and they become dominated by a whole new set of emotions and ideas. Somehow they stay sober for 20, 30, 40 years, forever, but they're different. They're not the same individual. They've turned into different individuals. You know what you find in Alcoholics Anonymous? What you find here is it's possible sometime to do this thing and seemingly have a psychic change that'll keep you sober for a month or two or a year or two or 10 years or 15 years. And then you know what happens? Then worldly clamors. Something happens. They revert back. They start drinking again. They start drugging. They start doing something else. They fall back down with that gravitational pull of alcoholism. Why does that happen? Sometimes people sort of use AA and can stay sober. They found that in the 1950s, the truth. And the truth is many people can stay sober, physically sober, for a long period of time. I'm talking about years, without working the steps at all. I mean, that's the nasty little secret of AA. Many people can stay sober for a long period of time, seemingly to good purpose, holding down jobs, having families over a long period of time, and not necessarily doing the whole thing. Not believing in God, not buying into this stuff, not doing the, you know, just sort of like hanging in there. There's a great essay called A Strong Cup of Tea, you know, and they can stay sober on the fellowship, just on the companionship. You know, we long, it says, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Alcoholics crave fellowship because they're inherently lonely all the time, no matter what. No matter what's going on, they're craving some sort of connection with something other than themselves because they're isolated and they're lonely. You know what I'm talking about when you get in your car and you drive home and it's just you, when it's 3 o'clock in the morning, it's just you. You could be married. You could be in a stadium full of people. It's always just you. It's just hard to sort of connect and feel a part of, and you got to do a lot of work, hang out with a lot of groups, do a lot of crap just to feel just a little bit connected and belonging and not feeling isolated, because that's an alcoholic's exhibit. And, you know, probably normal people have this deal going on. Alcoholics just feel it more. So the bottom line is how does this change work? And that's what I really want to talk about. You know, my sponsor says, it's your personality that's killing you. So how does this whole thing fit together with the God deal? Because it has something to do with God. Read those steps. It has something to do with the God thing. The sixth step has something to do. The sixth step that goes before the seventh step, that's the step that separate. That's some sort of important step because that separates out the men from the boys. The boys don't get to the seventh step. Only the men get to the seventh step. So the first thing you do is you got to get separated out into that man thing, whatever that is, or that woman thing. It says in the sixth step, it says, I mean, you just can't get rid of the God thing, at least the way A does. It says in the sixth step, it says, these are individuals, it talks about this in the 12th step, that have repeatedly tried, the people who become the men are those who have repeatedly tried to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator. Definitionally, on the sixth step, the men are the ones that are completely surrendered to the idea of God, and they're growing in the image and likeness of their Creator. You don't have to like it. That's just the words that we have in the big book. This is our basic text. 12 and 12 is our basic text. These are just the words that are set forth in the big book. Now, you can do it this way. How about if you do it this way? Well, yeah, but that's for you, but that's not for me. Or I know they said that, but that's not necessarily true for everybody. I know they said that, Russ, but, you know, I'm different. You know, if you're an alcoholic, you're an excuse-aholic. If you're an alcoholic, I'm going to do it my way-aholic. You know, you're a defiant. I don't care. Listen. I don't care. I like to rationalize. You know what rationalizing is? Telling myself rational lies. You know, this is a program of rigorous honesty. You know, this is not a program for people who don't do the program, but explain to people the reasons why they're not doing the program. That sounds rational to them. This is a program where people get out of it if they follow the recipe and they conform and they obey and they do it. You know how hard, listen, you go to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know the biggest struggle with alcoholics, what's the biggest struggle? What's the biggest struggle in working the steps? I can't seem to do this third step. I can't seem to do the fourth. Is obeying. I mean, the stuff they ask you to do isn't much, is it? Just get down on your knees. Say this prayer. Just write this list. I mean, it's the small stuff compared to the crap that we've been through. By the time we get here, this is like nothing. And yet, this is nothing compared to the kind of life we lived in order to get here. The stuff they ask you to do is nothing, except we have this little niggling thing in our brain that says, I ain't going to do that shit. I'm just not going to do it. I don't care what this guy Russell says. I think he's full of crap. I can do it the way I'm going to do it. Do you take a personality that's inherently defiant, won't do this thing, doesn't even understand that they are magnetically attracted to the things of this world, which will pull them away. It's either God or man, pull them away from God. How do you get a personality when your personality is addicted to everything out there in the world, addicted to old ways of thinking, old ideas? If I only had this, I only had that. You know, there's so many, 100 forms of old ideas that keep us selfish and that's what it says in the book, selfishness and self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, driven by 100 forms. Hey, you don't like what I'm saying? You don't have an argument with me. You have an argument with Alcoholics Anonymous. It says if you're an alcoholic, your real problem is you're selfish and you're self-centered. I know you think you're a good guy, but you're wrong. No, you're wrong. I mean, you're just wrong. You think you're a good guy in a good world and you'd never hurt anybody, but you're wrong. You're just basically selfish, self-centered, and childish. You know, I mean, you know, a simple nice act once in a while isn't enough. The fact that you won't kill babies, you know, or you cry at movies, it's all horseshit. Basically, all you do is think about, basically, if you're an alcoholic, all you do is think about yourself and all you care about is yourself. You know, every once in a while, you'll have some moment of compassion for somebody else and you'll think you're a good person. But basically, you spend your whole life worrying about you and caring about you and thinking about you. And if you got a problem, you believe me, if you had a problem, a real problem that's bothering you, you know what I mean? And, you know, I put somebody in front of you that's dying of cancer, you know, it would be a problem for them, but you'd still be thinking about your problem. You know, you're addicted to you. You're an alcoholic. It's all about you, you know, me. You know, that old story, enough about me, let's hear about you. What do you think about me? You know, I mean, it's all me crap. It's all what's going to fix me. So, you know, we're selfish. It says if you're an alcoholic, this is the crap they ask you to buy into. How are you going to figure out how to fix the problem if you're not willing to even accept the problem? You know? An alcoholic is, you know what it says about us? It says we're self-overrun riot, though we usually don't think so. I'm so used to guys I sponsor telling me I don't understand that I'm full of shit and stuff like that, it doesn't even faze me anymore. I expect it. I come to expect it. You know, I mean, you know, the fact that you think otherwise, you know, driven by 100 forms, selfish and self-centered, driven by 100 forms. That means if you're aware of 20 of them, you're missing 80 of them, okay? 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, you know what that means? It means you're deluded. Self-seeking, we step on the toes of others and they, you know, self-centeredness. We step on the toes of others and they retaliate, seemingly without provocation. But we learn that in the past, we've made decisions based upon self. You know what self is? That is doing things because we feel we want to do it. We feel it's in our best interest. So you're looking at me, it's like, this is what you think. I said, that because we've made decisions based upon self. All our decisions is based upon what I want to do. So you look at me and you say, well, duh, yeah, what's your point? Well, I don't know if you've read step three. That's the step where we turn our will. Our will is basically what we want to do. And our lives over to the care of God. Our real purpose is to be of maximum service to him and other people. So you say, well, what are you talking about? I'm saying your life doesn't belong to you anymore. Your will doesn't belong to you anymore. You know, it's not about you anymore. It's about God, and it's about what God wants you to do and the things. It's about being close to God. Your whole life now, if you want to do this thing, is about signing up for the royal priesthood where you're close to God and you only concentrate on performing the works he has set out for you. Now, before you start saying, well, this guy's kind of crazy, let's go ahead and read this. Selfishness, self-centeredness. This is page 62. That, we think, is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find at some point in the past we have made decisions based on self, which put us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. I'm going to do what I want to do, and this is what I want to do. And if you see me doing something, it's probably because I want to do it. Above everything, we must get rid of the selfishness. You know what kind of personality I have? What kind of personality do I have? A selfish personality. What kind of personality do you have? You have a selfish personality. Above everything, you know what you would look like if you had an unselfish personality? Really incredible. We're talking Mother Teresa shit. We're talking serious. We're talking, don't worry, you're not in any danger of getting there soon, okay? Don't worry. But that'd be, I wonder what you guys would look like if you had an unselfish personality. I wonder what I would look like if I had an unselfish personality. You sort of see it in AA once in a while. And I'm not talking about myself, but you know where our leaders are? You ever read what are leaders? How do you know you got a leader? They're trusted servants. Leaders serve. Leaders are the ones that go out of their way and take their time and effort to serve other people because they love other people and they care about people. They don't necessarily go to, even though they need meetings, they don't necessarily go to meetings because they need the meeting. They go to meetings because their motivation is to see if there's anybody that can help. That's the start of the unselfish personality. They start thinking about their own little plans and designs. They start thinking about others and how they can help other people. That's a sign of true sobriety. That's what happens in here as you change. You become unselfish, and people are attracted to that. That's what it looks like. It says, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God, there he is again, makes that possible. And there often seems no other way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live it up to them, even though we would like to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying. We had to have God's help. That's what they say in chapter agnostic. A mere code about morals, better philosophy of life, we'd been sober a long time ago. But this code didn't work for us. Our dilemma was we were powerless. We had to find a power to get us out of this personality, to change our personality. And that's why we wrote a book that's spiritual as well as mental, and we're going to talk about God. And here's where the hackles of our necks stand up, and we don't want to hear about the God thing, and we're pissed off about the God thing, and a lot of alcoholics fall out by the wayside. They try to do this just giving lip service to God, giving lip service to turn their life over, but they don't really do it. They may be throwing the towel. Okay, God, I'm throwing in the towel. And then they snatch it back and, you know, throw off strips to see whether that'll satisfy the guy, you know? But my life is my life, and I'm going to run it. I'm the master of my fate. I'm the captain of my soul. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. You know, and here's the deal. Say, well, that sort of feels good. We ought to stop playing God. I'm not God. But here's the problem. How can you stop playing God when you don't know what playing God looks like and how you're playing God? You know, how you're playing. Whenever you start thinking about where you should be or what you should be or what's going on with you, you're playing God. Whenever you start thinking about your plans and designs and, you know, I'll do this and I'll do this, and I'll go there and I'll, how do you know you're even going to be alive in 5 minutes? There's not a person in here who knows whether they're going to be alive tomorrow. There's not a person in here who has control over whether or not they're going to breathe, have a breath tomorrow. I was sitting next to a gal in Bible study 2 months ago. She looked as healthy as anybody in this room. She died yesterday of terminal cancer. They discovered lung cancer, and 2 months later, she was dead. You don't even know whether you're going to make it home. There may be an accident. May not even be caused by you. You may be hit by a drunk. You may be dead tomorrow. I go home, and I say, you know so-and-so? He says, yeah, he died in an accident. 95% of the crap that's going on in your life has nothing to do with you. It just happens to you out of the blue. How can you sit around and say, well, I plan to do this. I plan to do that. Well, this is what's going to happen in my life. That's what's going to happen in my life. You have no idea what's going to happen to your life. Okay, first of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decide that here and after, in the strong, it's like we're turning our life over to the care of God. Like, big deal. Like, he doesn't have control over it anyway. You know? Next, we decided here and after, in the strong of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we marched to freedom. That's the keystone. You turn it over to him. Now listen to this. Here it goes. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. You want remarkable things? When we take that position, remarkable things followed. You don't take that position, you're stuck with mere sobriety. You don't get the remarkable things. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He's not the higher power. He's the highest power. He provided what we needed. Here it goes. If we kept close to him and performed his work well. You thought I was kidding about that? I didn't make this stuff up. This is the big book. You know why I quote that stuff? Because that's the deal. It's about obeying. It's about conforming to the book, to the program of recovery. Not what I think the program of recovery is, but what the program of recovery really is. Established on this footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered that we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. And then it says after the third step prayer, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. So now we've done that. And how long does it take? Listen, how long do you think it takes to do that deal? Now, it's true. A third step, when your sponsor says do the third step, you just get down on your knees, you say the prayer. Maybe that takes you a year or 2 years or 6 months, whatever it is, and you think you're done with it. But you're not really done with it, right? Because you get down on your knees and you conform, say the third step prayer, and then you get back up again and you look for the car, the gal, the money and everything, and you say, that was nice. And, you know, how long does it take to when you really conform and turn your will in your life, where it becomes the central factor in your life? 10 years, 15 years? A lifetime. A lifetime. It takes a lifetime of focusing on God. While at the same time you're doing what Bill Wilson, you got one eye on God, and you got another guy on that, I got another eye on that blonde. One guy on God, the other eye on that car. You become the double-minded man they talk about in James, in the book of James, which is what what they said in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. In Dr. Bob and the Good Old, the first 4 years, if you want to thoroughly follow what they did, all they did was they studied the Bible. They said the books that were absolutely essential was the book of James, Sermon on the Mount, and 1 Corinthians 13. Book of James, chapter 1, talks about the double-minded man who has doubts. You know, he believes in God, but he needs the car. He believes in God, but he wants the girl. He believes in God, but money's not important. It's just right up there with oxygen. It's very hard to do that God or money thing, that God or mammon thing. And that's what we spend the next 10, 20 years here. You know, saying the serenity prayer and then whining in our meetings about how we don't have enough money. Saying the serenity prayer and then whining in our meetings that our boss doesn't like us. Focusing on God for 5 seconds and then spending the next 6 months thinking about our jobs and thinking about our money and things like that. You know, that's the battle that's going on inside of us. You know, how many years is it? And most people lose the battle. They fall off the deal. They lose the battle. They live lives of quiet desperation. They drink again, they drug again, they get sucked into the morass of alcoholism based upon the worldly clamors that suck them. And the only relief from that is focusing totally on God, because your focus, because like it says in the 12 and 12, true independence is total dependence upon God. Because if you're focused on God, then you're focused on what he would have you do, help other people, and you don't need any money in the bank to help other people. You don't even need a good, nice car to help other people. You don't need anything to help other people, to be kind and love other people. And to the extent that you're focused on God, you've got it all right there. And it doesn't mean you can't have stuff or can't have nice stuff. But the point is, nice stuff isn't your life. It can come, it can go. The money can come and go. The relationship can come and go. But it's not your life. Your life is not about that. It's about him. And that's what this book is about. And that's why it says, in this book, right here, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. Humbly rely upon, how do you humbly rely upon God when all you do is you think about yourself and what you're going to do and how you're going to straighten up your life? That's the seventh step, humbly relying, humbly asking him. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that strength means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate to us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention for what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. There it goes again. Commence to outgrow fear, which is the growth threat of our lives. Now, I got 5 minutes. I'm going to wrap up seven steps for you. You're not going to like it. That's the basis. Now I'm going to tell you about the seventh step. You ain't going to like this shit. I'm going to tell you how this thing works. The seventh step is the. Do you remember how things were going for you the day before you came into Alcoholics Anonymous? Do you remember how you were doing about a month before you came into Alcoholics Anonymous? How's that working out for you? Were you like one of these guys? You had just won the lottery, you know. Your life was all together. You felt great. You said, "Man, life is going so great for me. This would be the perfect time to check out Alcoholics Anonymous." It was like, it was, I don't know about you, but in December of 1980 was the worst part of my alcoholism. I came into, I didn't come to, I, on December 25th, Christmas, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I had nothing. I was morally, spiritually, financially bankrupt. I had gone out with some girl to some party. I had been kicked out by her father because I was drunk. I was all alone on Christmas Day. Let me tell you something. And I'm a self-pityaholic. Now, I'm the guy who sits by the record player playing those, you know, Only the Lonely, you know, over and over again, thinking about my funeral and all those good-looking gals, you know, around, gathered around the coffin, you know, saying, feeling so bad because of the way they treated me and shit. You know what I mean? And I'm like into self-pity. I've taken self-pity to an art form, okay? I mean, really, believe me. I don't need to be in a bar with 300 people. I got 300 people in my room listening to the room. Listen, just give me a little Karen Carpenter, Rainy Days and Mondays. I'm like there. You know what I mean? Pour me a drink, you know? And I'm there at 3 o'clock in the morning. My life is a total wreck, and I'm 31 years old, and I can't envision life without drinking or anything like that, and I'm completely out of it. And some guy comes on the TV, and he's a Baptist preacher or something like that, and he gives his testimony, and he says, you want to change your life and everything, get down on your knees. And I get down on my knees, and I ask Jesus to come into my life, which is not a big deal when you're desperate, I suppose, except unless you're a Jewish kid from New York. Now, wait a second. Now, I'm going to talk about that. You know, I'm a Jewish kid from New York, okay? Now, if you know anything about Jewish kids from New York, you know, the last thing we're going to do is ask Jesus to come into our lives. It's not Jesus' fault. It's not his fault at all. It has a lot to do with pride and history and culture, and we're worried about whether my Aunt Joan is going to hate me. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that, and wasn't Hitler a Christian, and who knows what's going on there. Do you know, and I'm an alcoholic, you understand? I'm like you. I'm just like you. I'm an alcoholic. You know what an alcoholic, if you've ever worked without, you know, like, screw you. You know, I'm an alcoholic. Who the hell do you think you are? I ain't getting down on my knees for anybody. Perforce, that means for me at 3 o'clock in the morning to get down on my knees and listen to what this son of a bitch is saying on the TV. And he says, say this. Lord Jesus, come into my life, you know, I give my life to you. And all that stuff that you say when you say the sinner's prayer and everything, for me to do that, do you know, can you even imagine how desperate I was? I mean, there was nobody there watching. I just did that. Can you imagine how desperate I was? Can you imagine how humiliated it was? Can you imagine how humble that is? I've been working for the last 34 years to get back there. You know how I got there? Pain and suffering. You know what it says in step 7 of the 12 and 12? It says we get a new perspective by 100 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. By the way, right now you think AA is the greatest thing that ever happened to you. You know how you got here? The same way. The same way. The greatest thing that ever came from your life was when you were humbled by being crushed by your life and you came in here and you got a new perspective, a new idea. That should give you a hint as to how this humble thing works. That's not like a one-shot deal. You know, that's not we learn the value of suffering. You get this? Now, alcoholics like to run away from suffering. They don't like the suffering idea. They're like, okay, I'm here 1 year. I'm sober 1 year. When do I get the Cadillac, okay? I'm here 6 months. When am I going to have a relationship? I mean, we don't like the suffering. We like the always feeling good crap, okay? You buy into this stuff, let me tell you something, how it works, how seven-step work. The seven-step will humble you. Life will humble you. The worldly clamors will humble you. You know, you will go through the AA car wash. You know, you go through that car wash all day, and all of a sudden there's guys and gals in there with giant sledgehammers. They're beating the living shit out of you. You know the only thing? Don't fall off the conveyor belt. The conveyor belt is God. That's the book of James. He says, rejoice when you have trials of many kind. Rejoice. Because when you persevere and you endure through the bankruptcies, through the boredom, through the loneliness, through all the crap you're going through, the stuff that you think is the worst stuff that ever happened to you, the stuff that you complain about at AA meetings, the stuff that you go to AA meetings to link up to people and get down on your knees and say the serenity prayer, with the stuff that you do when you're going through crap and you're like this gal and you're saying, I'm confused, I don't know what's going on, that stuff that you hate and you think is the problem is your only hope of solution. Because it's the only time you're not thinking about yourself and thinking about all sorts of bullshit and you're thinking, when am I going to get help? And you have a shot of maybe turning towards God and saying, God help me, I give up, I'm powerless. And having some form of humility where you're actually doing what I did on that day, you know, maybe not as great as that day. And then what happens, you turn towards him. And as the book of James says, as you persevere through that, your faith gets stronger. You get more and more reliant upon God. You more and more think about God, less and less think about the world and worry about the world. And then one day, your whole life is about thinking about him. And you're no longer turning your life over to him. You're living a turned over life. And so the world can't really touch you because it's all about him. Because you spent the last 10 years going through that stuff and turning it over to him and relying upon him. And then all of a sudden you reach the point that no matter what's going on in your life, the bankruptcy, the balance chapter, everything, you realize that it's all going to work out okay because you've gotten this far and all you've done is trusted in God and God is going to take care of this no matter what happens, even if you have cancer. It's about humbly asking God, humbly turning your life over to his will. Let me tell you something. That is a real, to do that all the time. You know, what did it say? What did Dr. Thibault say? He says, our deal is constant ego deflation and death, routinely, constantly ego. You know what happens? We just get too well too fast. We walk in unemployable, you know, 3 months later, we're under frickin' paid. You know what I mean? We just, you know, I mean, you know who I see doing well in AA? People who are constantly being tested and hurt. You know why I see drink again in AA? They get their life back. They get the money back. They get the girl back. They get the guy back. They get the car back. It's like, hey, AA is great. Nice to know you. I don't have time for a meeting. I got to go to the football game. The arrogance comes back. The cockiness comes back. The lack of humility comes back. The stuff that you're pissed off at, that you think is keeping you down, that's hurting you, so you can't fly with the ego, that's the only stuff that's saving your ass. Alcoholism, the worst part of selfish, self-centered alcoholism, thrives on material affluence. Money can keep alcoholics sick for a long time by a lot of people to get you out of jams, and make you think that you're doing okay. That's why we have all these movie stars that are dying off the vine, committing suicide, all sorts of stuff. You know what I mean? Can keep you really sick for a long period of time. Really delusional. And yet the only thing we think of is if I could only be like this guy, if I could only be like that guy, if I could only be handsome, if I could only have money, if I only had a car, if the world only looks, then I'd be okay. No, you wouldn't be okay. You'd be a whack job. You'd be crazy. I told you wouldn't like the seventh step. You know, I mean, we're really delusional people. You know, we're so sick. I was going into the password. I was setting up some password in some account, and so you had to think of these words. What are these questions? You know, the three questions, and the third question was, what famous person do you most resemble? And I put in Brad Pitt. I figured nobody guessed that one. Oh, well. So if you're going to be involved in this thing and you're going to do this thing, if you're 5 years or 10 years sober and you're saying to yourself, I can't believe this. I've been doing this thing for 10 years, for 6 months. Why am I going through this crap again? Well, that's why you're going through this crap again. You're going to go through it. You're going to go through it. You're going to go through it. You're going to look for all sorts of ways of getting out of it. You're going to try to figure it out. It's going to hurt you. You're going to be like this gal. I'm confused and everything. And one day, you're going to turn towards Scripture. You're going to turn towards God. You're going to read the big book. You're going to say the serenity prayer. You're going to say, God, help me. And you're going to mean it because you're going to be humbled, because you're going to be scared. And somehow, some way, a miracle is going to happen. You're going to miraculously go through it. It's going to happen. And you're going to look, and you know something? It's going to be wonderful. Even if it's bad, it's going to be wonderful. You're going to look back and say, man, if that didn't happen to me, this wouldn't happen to me. It's like a miracle. And you're going to change. And you're going to have more and more faith. And as your faith grows, you're going to be less worried. And as more you start believing in God, you're going to have less fear. And you're not going to be walking around the planet constantly worrying about what's going to happen to me next week, what's going to happen to me tomorrow. I wonder what they're thinking about me and everything like that. And one day, you're just going to be you're going to be linked into him. You'll only be thinking about him, and you're not going to be worried about all the crap that you worry about with the 10 million voices and the committee in your head. Does any of that make any sense? That's the seventh step. But unfortunately, you got to go through the time. I know we're alcoholics. We, you know, I don't know about you. The one great thing about booze is, like, no matter how you feel, whack. You're whack, you know. That's what I went up to the bar and I went whack, and I was feeling better. Whack, whack, you know. I was a fast drinker, you know what I mean? You know, the great thing about booze, you know, dope or whatever you're doing, coke, smoking weed, whatever it is, the great thing is you get better like that. Immediately. You don't have to go to 50 AA meetings and do the steps and everything and all that crap. It's like, bam, you know what I mean? And you're there. You know, some guy says, when am I going to stop worrying about money? Oh, about 25 years I'd probably do it, you know. I think it was about 15 years. It gets less, it gets a little bit better and better. But, you know, yeah, around 10 years, you're still going to be tossing your cookies. You know, we don't like that. You don't want to hear that, do you? That's why I get all these nervous laughs, you know what I mean? They're sort of laughing, but, you know, that's a nervous laugh. You say, I think this son of a bitch may be right, you know. I mean, he's got to be wrong about that crap, you know. So God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Russell. Everybody help us thank Russell. Before we close, we're going to introduce our secretary. Mike Chase is going to do that tonight.
I'm recovered, but I'm not your secretary. My name is Mike Chase. Keeping with the seventh tradition, which states every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now being passed. Fully self-supporting means let's dig deep and put a couple bucks in the basket so we can pay rent in this facility, which is so great for us. I have asked Kyle to come up and read the recovered statement for us tonight. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group and around AA nowadays are describing themselves as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Come on up.
My name is Kyle. I'm a recovered alcoholic. We are not cured from alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we are cured, we should be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. And we are now saying where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you. Give him a round of applause, guys. So, 1940 style big book sponsorship from the forward of the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried 50%, got sober at once and remained that way. 25 sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder who stayed with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, neither should the sacred approach to back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics in the room? Okay, if you are not recovered, can I see a show of hands of anyone who might need a sponsor? Just, you know, wiggle your finger or something like that. We got one over there. We got somebody for you. You're set. Let's see. Next week is going to be our last meeting for the week or for the month. Join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study meeting. Fellowship is at 6:30. Our Big Book Study starts at 7:15. Should you require a big book of your own, we have a large print editions for sale. We also got a reproduction, some CDs, some big book dictionaries, and some other flyers over there. Please take a look at those before you leave. We meet here every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15. We ask that you be courteous and begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you very much, you guys. guys next week. And thank you, Russell.
Thank you, Mike. And before we close, we just want to announce that we have tonight and all of the past sessions that Russell's been here with us for, I guess this is 7 weeks now, on alcoholicsandgod.org, so you can check that out. And again, like Mike just said, we also have a meeting that we would welcome you to join us on Monday nights at 7:15. It's a big book study. We sit down. We start from page zero, and we go all the way through the book, and that's where we study the book. We come in here to listen to speakers that have great experience with that information, that knowledge, and they come and share it with us. So please join us on Monday night. And please, one more time, help me thank Russell before we close. And you guys can all stay in your seats. We're just going to take 1 minute and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thanks, everybody.
Thirsty, body's aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do is keep on praying, 'cause on my own I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try. But with you I become a much stronger man, getting on my knees and still back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much to kill. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
just can't get you right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees looks me back on my feet again. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees looks me back on my feet again. Wow.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying, watch them grow. What a wonderful world. And I think to myself, what a wonderful
corner with tear stains on her eyes from the places she's wandered and the shame she can't hide. She says, how did I get here? I'm not who I once was, and I'm crippled by the fear that I've fallen too far to love. But don't you know who you are? What's been done for you? Don't you know who you are? You are more than the choices that you've made. You are more than some of your past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. She tries to believe it, that she's been given new life. But she can't shake the feeling, well, that it's not true tonight. She knows all the answers, and she's rehearsed all the lines. And so she'll try to do better, but then she's too weak to try. But don't you know who you are? You are more than the choices that you've made. You are more than the sum of your past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. You are more than the choices that you've made. You are more than the sum of your past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create.
some of your past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. You are more than the choices that you make. You are